Yo, what's up? We're back, and this is going to be for the fight night coming up this Saturday. It's in Jacksonville again, I believe, Overeem versus Harris. And we do have an event, you know, coming on later today, a UFC Wednesday. They're going to be fighting, I believe, at 3 p.m. West Coast time, so 6 p.m. Eastern time. So check that out. Check out the prediction video if you haven't seen it. But we're getting right into this one. This is for Walt Harris versus Alistair Overeem in the first fight of the night, Dontell Mays versus Rodrigo Nascimento. And Dontell Mays, you know, he did have that tough UFC debut. He got matched up against Ciryl Gane, who is a super prospect. He's a big-time prospect out there in that division. And he was just outclassed. He eventually got submitted with the heel hook. But he's 6'6". He's athletic. He uses a lot of lateral movement, stance switching. He will close the distance, you know, with some decent straight punches, uppercuts, elbows, wide hooks. He will throw some decent front kicks, round kicks. Solid movement. He'll duck and roll. He likes to, you know, slip to create openings. He'll use spinning back fist. He spins a lot, though. It leaves him susceptible to, you know, getting taken down, getting countered, getting tired. There's a lot of athletic moves, flying knees, jumping kicks. And when he gets confident, he'll start to flow, but he holds his hands low, can be very easy to hit due to that. He also throws a lot of things very wide, especially in close range. And fights with good striking, man, they're definitely going to be able to come down the pipe and knock him out or hurt him. Doesn't like being pressured, very susceptible to low kicks also. And he just doesn't have the biggest power. But at heavyweight, obviously, anyone can knock you out. He did land a straight left hand that dropped his opponent on the Contender Series, finished him off. And he does have 4 knockouts. He's been finished once by strikes. And, man, I mean, his cardio is very questionable. But, you know, his grappling, I mean, he had very little grappling when he fought Alan Crowder. He was able to defend some takedowns against Muhammad Usman. He's also gotten better at the get-up game, so he is improving with his grappling. You know, he will use overhooks in the clinch to create space for knees, elbows. You know, he'll counter with Kimura's attempts as well to try to, you know, negate the takedown. But he's not a guy that's going to shoot takedowns. He's fairly easy to take down still, even with all the improvements. And we saw in his last fight, I mean, Ciryl Gane was able to hit a heel hook on this guy very late in the fight. Didn't really set it up very well. And didn't look like Mays was defending on the ground very good. His jiu-jitsu doesn't look very high level. And that's an issue coming up against his opponent here in Rodrigo Nascimento. Rodrigo, he is an undefeated guy. He's 7-0. He did get a win on the Dana White Contender Series, first round submission. And that got him the spot here in the company. But he's not been very active in his MMA career. He's only been pro since, or he has been a pro since 2012, but he's only had 7 fights. And his last win was against a 7-0 fighter, but a lot of his wins have been against lower level competition. He is training at American Top Team. A lot of heavyweights have been fighting from American Top Team recently. So he's definitely been having some guys to work with, some bodies. And this guy, Nascimento, is a beast, man. Very athletic for his size. Nice leg kicks. Good jab. Good left hook. Really nasty body kicks. He'll explode forward with punching combinations. Good slipper and ripper. You know, nice kicks to the body, to the head. In his last match, he landed a nice head kick early, made his opponent clinch up, and then Nascimento was able to eventually control on the ground there, but he has some edge to him. He'll taunt, he'll try to goad fighters into brawls. He can, you know, give a shot to take a shot. Sometimes can enter range a little sloppy, and he can kind of lean back to defend shots, kind of try to use his height, which here, that's going to be a bit of an issue because he is going to be against someone with a longer reach than him. So he has to be careful doing that. But Nascimento, you know, he does have 2 KO TKOs. He's an aggressive finisher, and he's never been finished. Obviously, he's undefeated, but he's a good jiu-jitsu player. I'm not sure what his belt rank is 100%, but if I had to guess, I would say he's a black belt, man. He has some of the better jiu-jitsu technique in the whole heavyweight division, potentially. Doesn't really have the greatest takedowns, but in the clinch, he does have heavy hips, good trips. He'll shoot in on some takedowns against the cage as well. But he looks very fluid on top or on bottom. He, you know, off his back, he will throw up triangles, arm bars, leg locks. I haven't seen him off of his back in MMA, though, only in BJJ. So most guys, I feel, are not going to want to, you know, take him down and test his ground game, even if they're on top of him. But on top, you know, he's very heavy. He'll get the mound. He has hard ground and pound, good back takes, really nice Runica choke, and he'll also attack the armbar from Runica choke or from back mount and from the regular mount. Good arm triangle as well. He does have 5 submissions, so he's finished all 7 of his victories. When he gets on top of his opponents, I mean, the fights are usually over. I feel if Natsumenchu can get on top of Mays with time to work, he's likely going to finish the fight. And, you know, he's still yet to get out of the first round, so his gas tank is kind of a question mark for Natsumenchu. But Dantel Mays isn't a guy that's a cardio machine, so I don't think he's going to necessarily push a pace that Rodrigo is going to get super fatigued from. And when I look at this fight, I just feel on the feet, I mean, they're both kind of raw. Dantel Mays tries to do a lot more, you know, different stuff, stand switching, kicks, knees, obviously. But Rodrigo, he also has some nice kicks, and he's a little bit more fundamentally sound on the feet, I think. I also think he's a little bit more explosive closing that distance, just maybe a little bit of a better athlete. But where I really think he's going to have a big advantage, and I think he knows he's going to have a big advantage, is if he can get in top position, or if he can get even Dantel Mays on top of him on the ground, because I believe he'll be able to sweep, find a submission off his back. Definitely will find a submission on top if he gets there. And I'm going to go with Natsumenchu here. He is a slight underdog. I had him picked on the Dana White Contender Series an underdog as well. And just looking at tape, I like this guy. I like what I see. I like that he's at American Top Team. I actually think Rodrigo could potentially, you know, be a player in this UFC heavyweight division. So I'm going with Rodrigo, and I think he's going to get a finish here. Up next here, we have a really fun fight, actually. Darren Elkins taking on Nate Landwehr. And there's several reasons why I really like this fight. You know, Darren Elkins, he's obviously a big-time UFC veteran. He's been in the organization for years. He's had some win streaks. He's had some ups. He's had some downs. And right now, you know, he has, you know, lost 3 consecutive fights. But he's taking on a guy in Nate Landwehr who's 0-1 in the UFC. But when he entered the UFC, had a lot of fanfare. Nate Landwehr is also, you know, he's a guy that talks a lot. He has a fun, entertaining style. So he's someone that could, you know, potentially catapult up the rankings if he can get a couple wins over these named guys. So I believe that's why the UFC is maybe trying to get him a win here over a, you know, aging name like Darren Elkins. But it's funny, right? Both these guys kind of fight similar, but in a different way. They both want to, you know, let their opponents land a lot of damage on them. They can eat shots. They're extremely durable. And they got crazy heart and cardio. So they want, you know, their opponents to try to take them out early. They recover. And then they end up taking their opponents out. But Darren Elkins likes doing it more in a grappling-based way where he takes guys down. He breaks their will. He wrestle-fucks them after he, you know, takes all their best and gets a decision. Whereas Nate Landwehr, he likes to keep it on the feet and get knockouts after he, you know, takes a beating. So both these guys like kind of allowing their opponents to get off to a fast start, then coming back. But one guy does it on the feet, one guy does it on the ground. But Landwehr, he's a dog, man. I mean, he isn't very technical, but he's gotten better at keeping his hands up, staying lighter on his feet. He will use some low kicks, front kicks to the body at distance, but really wants to get in close range, pocket fight, dirty box. You know, good hand fighting, super durable. He can keep a silly pace, man. I mean, he's almost infatigable. He has some massive short range power, big hooks, uppercuts, loads up on every shot and swarms you. Good knees as well. And, you can just, you know, slowly break guys down, start to cut the ring off, cut the cage off. But, usually needs to get taken down or hit a couple times to wake up. And he can struggle with guys who can pot shot him. Guys who can walk him into shots. He's been dropped several times. And he was put out with a nasty knee to the chin when he fought Herbert Burns. The thing with Landwehr is he'll just crash forward, very square stance. He'll throw a lot of lead uppercuts. A lot of shots that kind of leave you susceptible to counters. And those uppercuts, man, I mean, when he throws those uppercuts, he gets countered a lot. And he'll get hurt and rocked in a lot of fights. But he does have 7 knockouts and 13 wins. And he's going to fight for your money in there, man. I mean, when he gets cracked, he goes for the kill. He's never going to sit down. When he hurts you, he hunts for the finish. I mean, he's going to go in there, and he's going to do everything he can to win. But he isn't an offensive wrestler. His defensive wrestling is improving, but, I mean, not really the greatest. His aggressiveness, like I said, the squaring up of the hips, the crashing forward in a straight line, it just, you know, it makes it easy for opponents to get in on singles, get in on doubles. He will look to sprawl, stuff the head, attack front chokes, And when he can lock in a front choke, he'll really go for it. He'll force opponents to go to sleep or go to their backs. And he's good at, you know, knowing the position. He won't pull guard with the front choke, but he will, you know, kind of sit down with it. And when he gets top position, he's devastating with ground and pound, throws with bad intentions, and tries to take fighters out. I mean, he'll move to the mount, to the back, finish the job. Doesn't look for submissions. He's really only looking for damage. And when he does get put on his back, though, he can get held down. He will try to explode or belly down into a takedown attempt, but he can give his back. And in his last match, though, he did show some great toughness. He battled out of several deep choke submissions, worked his way back to his feet eventually, but was taken down very quickly in that fight, had basically nothing on the mat for Burns. And he has no submissions in his career. He's now been submitted 2 times. And he just fights in one way, which is just reckless abandon. He comes in shape. He brings a high pace. You know, good pressure. Looks for the kill shot. But man, I mean, a lot of things that you don't like from a guy like Nate Landwehr as well. And Darren Elkins, like I said, he has hit a rough patch in his career. Had a long win streak. It got snapped by Alexander Volkanovski, who is the current champion. Hasn't been able to get a win since. Lost 3 consecutive fights. His level of competition, you know, has been pretty good, though. And now he's getting to fight an 0-1 fighter. So if he can't beat him, it may be the end of the road for the damage in the UFC. But Elkins, he's an awkward striker. He has improved with the striking. He has a good jab, decent straight right hand, good body kick, decent check left hook and close, and he will attack uppercuts as well. You know, he has an awkward counter right hand. He catches fighters coming in with it, and he has a hell of a chin. His pressure, his pace breaks fighters, and a lot of his punches are just to close the distance or work his way into the clinch. And man, I mean, he just takes a ton of punishment in every fight, and eventually that's all got to come back to him. He has only been KO'd twice in his career. 6 knockouts himself, but his thing is grappling, man. Very strong grappler. That's his main objective in every fight. Doesn't have great wrestling shots, but he likes to get a hold of you, get body locks. He's a dog in the clinch, man. He gets attached to you, makes it ugly, dirty boxes, drags you to the mat, great in the scrambles, hard to take down, hard to hold down. Man, he gets desperate with takedown attempts at times, though. He can shoot from way too far out. He does have phenomenal cardio though, and when he gets on top, he's very good at slow cooking guys, staying in top position, going from half guard to side control to the mount, working short shots, controlling. But he isn't a big submission threat. He only has 4 submissions in his career, has only been submitted 1 time, and it's gonna be, you know, interesting to see what his game plan will be in this fight and whether, you know, he wants to try to start fast on a guy like Nate Landwehr. Or, you know, do his usual thing, like let Nate, you know, try to wear himself out on him and then get into his grappling game. But, man, I mean, Darren Elkins, way more experience here. He's super tough. I expect him to get takedowns. Nate, he needs to use low kicks, try to catch a shot, but he just has terrible defense, too. He gets taken down very easily, relies on his opponents quitting or getting tired. And Elkins isn't a guy that's going to quit or get tired, man. Elkins isn't a guy like that. I mean, it is possible that Elkins has taken too much damage. Nate lands a shot, knocks him out. But to me, I'm going with Darren Elkins. I think he's going to take this guy down at will over and over. I think Landwehr is going to continue to try to pressure, you know, put in these uppercuts, getting some good shots. But I think Elkins is going to clinch up with him, slow the pace down, take him down, control him, and win a decision here. So I'm going with Darren Elkins to get back in the win column.
Ooh, fuck. We got this one here, baby. Flyweight fight. Courtney Casey, Mar Romero, bro. Ooh, this is not a very good fight right here, but Courtney Casey making a return to the octagon. Extended layoff for her. She suffered some injuries. She's been out over a year now, but she's returning. She's going up a weight class as well. She's always been, you know, one of the bigger 115ers, so maybe the move to 125 is going to do her well, but she hasn't fought at 125 since she lost to Pearl Gonzalez in 2013. And Casey's also not getting any younger, and in my opinion, she looked very bad in her last match. She's 33 now. She looked very slow, stiff in that fight. Very bad striking against Calvillo, but always been bad with her footwork, with her movement, very plodding. She is tall. She had a long reach for 115. And due to that, she was able to use long punches, jabs, you know, straights, and long hooks to kind of land from the outside. She also has a nice low calf kick, but she stands very tall, flat-footed, right in front of opponents. She likes to wait for opponents to go first, and then she will sometimes counter with combinations, like she'll blitz forward with the uppercut or a hook. She does seem like she has some pop in her punches, but her striking is just not very good. She'll throw punches in the pocket with her hands down, her chin right in the air. She floats her chin really high. She'll back up in straight lines with her chin straight in the air. She's just playing slow, man, and being flat-footed leaves her available to low kicks. She does throw a lot of volume, and she can make fights very close due to that. You know, she has had a lot of split decisions in the UFC, but she isn't going to put you away. She does have 3 TKO finishes. She's never been finished by strikes. She has a good chin, but isn't someone that's going to really knock you out most likely. In this fight, I mean, with Borrella, who has a questionable chin, it is possible. But Courtney Casey, she's a decent grappler. She isn't a good wrestler, but her jiu-jitsu isn't bad. She also doesn't look very physically strong. I mean, she seems to get out-muscled and dominated in the clinches a lot. And she's been taken down with body locks in multiple fights. She also doesn't defend single-leg takedowns very well. Bottom line, man, is she can get taken down quite easily. You know, she's defended just 38% of the takedowns that, you know, she's had to defend in the UFC. And when Casey's put on her back, she is aggressive. She has nice upkicks, which she showed against Jessica Aguilar. She will work the arm bars. She's actually really good at the arm bar. She'll catch it in scrambles, good belly down arm bar. I've seen Casey even get a flying arm bar before. And she also has solid sweeps, but she just isn't very good in top position. Her get-up game is also pretty much non-existent. So she gets held down. She loses rounds most likely if she doesn't get the sweep or the submission. She does have 3 submissions. She has been submitted just 1 time. But she's always been able to go 3 hard rounds. She doesn't gas out. At 125 pounds, it's going to be interesting to see how she looks. Maybe she'll look a little bit faster. But for Mara Borrella, her opponent, you know, she has her back against the wall here. Back-to-back losses. 2-3 UFC record. So definitely needs a win here to stay in the company. And welcoming Casey to the division is a fairly big opportunity for Borrella. Casey, she has a big name. She's also a good stylistic matchup for Mara. And Borrella's kind of similar on the feet. She's a flat-footed counter striker. She'll throw some leg kicks. Her straight right hand is okay. She'll throw a straight right left hook. Good right hook left kick combination. She likes to close the distance with some straight punches. But she's also very slow. She can't strike moving backwards. Very hittable. No fakes or feints. Very predictable with her striking. And she can get slapped, man. I mean, we saw her get knocked out with a big knee in her last fight against Lauren Murphy. Not in her last fight, but in her fight with Lauren Murphy. She did get dropped in her last fight by Montana De La Rosa, who isn't a big puncher. Her chin is just a major liability, but, she isn't dangerous with her striking. I mean, she has 3 KO TKOs. She has been finished 4 times now by knockout, but she's at her best when she's grappling, man, against Talia Santos. Closed that distance pretty quickly, controlled her in the clinch, took her down. Good cage control, good body locks. Good job of when she lands the body lock, she'll land directly into half guard, directly into side control. Avoids the guard, which she should have to do here against Casey. If she can avoid Casey's guard, that takes away a lot of Casey's submission ability. On top, she's strong, heavy pressure, good pressure passes, good rear naked choke. In her last fight, she did win in the... In her last win, she did win in the first round with a rear naked choke. But, you know, she did take down... who was it that she fought in her last fight? Montana De La Rosa, and she won the first round of that fight. But she got out-grappled in the last 2 rounds. And she just a minor piece and cues against a girl who's an arm hunter like Courtney Casey. Borrella does have 4 career submissions. She has been submitted just 1 time. Her cardio is a little bit suspect. She does get tired in the 3rd round, but man, I mean, this is not a very intriguing fight. Both girls are slow. If Borrella's smart, I see her close the distance, holding Casey against the cage, landed some body locks, avoided submissions, and waited the fight. It's hard to trust Borrella. Maybe she'll walk into an uppercut. Maybe she'll get caught in submission. But this is a good matchup for her. Due to that, I'm going to go with Borrella by a stinky 3-round decision. Up next here, we have a fun fight. Giga Chikadze taking on Mike Davis. It's actually a really pretty fun card, so besides that one fight. But Mike Davis, he's returning following his decimation of Thomas Gifford. He beat Gifford in a disturbing way, man. He ultimately knocked him out violently. And he's a high-level, well-rounded prospect. He can maybe become a top 15 fighter one day if he progresses, like some people think he will. But he's going to be taking on a good kickboxer in Giga Chikadze, who got an upset victory over Jamal Emmers. It was a split decision, but Chikadze showed some nice striking skills once again, even showed some improved work on the mat, hurt Emmers on more than one occasion, and he's now 2-0 in the UFC with two split decision victories. So fought very close, but has been able to get the job done. Here in this fight, though, I don't see him getting the job done. I got Mike Davis all day. Mike Davis, he's a good boxer. He's gotten better at defending and throwing low kicks, understands range and distance, and Chikadze just has terrible takedown defense against the double leg, against body locks. He doesn't throw much volume. Inside, Davis actually has much cleaner hands. I think Emmers and Brandon Davis just let Chikadze off the hook, man. They stroke with him way too much. Mike Davis, he's a smart guy. I see him exploiting Chikadze, man. Davis is very physical as well. If he gets a takedown, I see him getting being very effective with this crushing top game. And he has very good double legs, very good timing on his double legs, very good in the clinch. He's very physically strong. He'll get slams. I see him being a lot stronger than Giga. He's good at getting into dominant positions like the mount, the back, finishing the fight. Heavy ground and pound, nasty ground and pound. And good Rinnegan chokes, good Kimuras, good arm triangles. I just think he's going to be smart, get takedowns, dominate the fight. And I actually see him taking the back and pounding out Giga or getting a first-round submission. So I'm high on Mike Davis to get the win here. I think he's going to get it done early. Up next here, we have another good fight. Kevin Holland taking on Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. And Holland, he's looking to get back to his winning ways. He did have a disappointing performance last time. He was doing well against Brendan Allen, but eventually gassed out, submitted. And previous to that fight, Holland had won 3 in a row. So Kevin Holland, he's going to be facing Fluffy Hernandez, who did bounce back from the first loss of his career to get a submission victory and his first UFC win in his second UFC fight. And he's 26 years old. He's still evolving. He's improving pretty rapidly. Kevin Holland's only 27, so both these guys should be getting a lot better. Hernandez, you know, he actually holds a victory over Brendan Allen. And if he can defeat Holland here, he's going to be close in the top 15. But watching the tape on this fight, it's interesting because on the feet, I definitely feel Holland is better. You know, he's more diverse, throws crazy kicks, jumping attacks, knees. Hernandez is more of a puncher boxer. He has good forward pressure, good uppercuts, good hooks. His head movement isn't bad either, but he walks into shots a lot. He also gets hurt to the body. And Marcus Perez is able to land a body kick, hurt him. Hernandez, when he's forced to go backwards, he's not very good. And the same goes for Holland, which is what makes it interesting, because Holland likes to stay at range, stick and move, uses movement, long-range shots, and the issue is he stops his feet, and he could start throwing, like, little jabs or little shots that don't have a lot of power, and guys could just come over the top, start walking him down, landing the harder shots, and he can be controlled and taken down easily as well. And Hernandez is a guy who's always looking to grab you, getting the clinch, work for takedown, so that's something that you kind of have to look out here when you look at this matchup between these two guys. Hernandez also fights at a high pace, and Holland is taking this fight on short notice, just like he took that last fight on short notice. So who knows if he's going to be able to keep the pace that Hernandez brings, because when he fought Brendan Allen, he actually was doing very well on the ground. Holland is good. I mean, he's good off his back, good sweeps. He has good front chokes. He has a lot of good things, you know, that he has going for him on the ground. Very hard to submit, but when he takes these short notice fights and someone can pressure him, maybe he's going to gas out again. But Hernandez, he's going to be pieced up by the jab. I mean, it's going to happen. But if he can use his feet to close the distance, get inside, close the gap on Holland and make it a close range fight, he's going to have success. I just think Hernandez is likely going to get takedowns also. And, Holland is just too nonchalant. And he allows fighters to get to dominant positions. Hernandez is a guy who usually doesn't submit from top position, but he does have very nice front chokes, a really nasty guillotine, good anaconda he got in his last fight. And he's likely gonna, you know, have to try to continue to take him down a few times. And Holland is gonna have to work to stand up, sweep, keep the fight. on the feet or, you know, stand up quickly, keep the pace. But I just feel like Hernandez is probably going to get the takedown, some control. And I'm going to pick Hernandez by decision. But this is a pick'em for a reason. It's a very close fight. Man, up next here we have another badass fight, man. The badass fight keeps on rolling with Matt Brown taking on Miguel Baeza in this one. And Miguel Baeza, he continued his winning ways. He's still undefeated. He finished Hector Aldana with leg kicks. Looks very good in that fight. And he's getting a huge opportunity. He's fighting an aging legend in Matt Brown. Everyone knows who Matt Brown is. Matt Brown's, you know, been in the UFC for years. He's been putting it down for ages. One of the best action fighters of all time. But Miguel Baez is a sniper, man. He's tall. He's long. He's fast. He likes to stick on the outside, throw straight punches, kicks. Nasty low calf kick. He showed that off in his last fight. Nice jab. Good one, too. Straight right hand is very fast. It's very long. He closes a lot of distance with it. And he'll throw a nice left hook, straight right hand combination. Good overhand right. He could strike moving backwards. He'll sneak at some uppercuts. He'll walk fighters into some hooks. Doesn't move his head, and he can be very flat-footed, stationary. And due to that, he eats a lot of shots when fighters get inside on him. We saw that when he fought Reyna on the Contender Series. But he's dangerous on the inside as well, with knees to the body, to the head. And those knees to the body could potentially be a big factor with Matt Brown's style in this fight. And he also has nasty round kicks to the body and the head, which Matt Brown's always struggled with. I mean, if you watch fights, I mean, he even holds his hands low versus kickers because he knows he's susceptible to the body shots. And that's how Don Cerrone knocked him out with that head kick, man. But Baez is going to have a big speed advantage. But he needs to utilize more movement in his fights. This is a dangerous fight against a hard, heavy hitter. So, I mean, you would much rather want to see him moving and grooving, not trying to stay so stationary at times. But he needs to attack the body. Obviously, that's plagued Brown throughout his career. Snipe Brown from the outside, you know, touch and move. And if Brown can pressure, this fight gets very dicey for me. But Baeza does have 6 knockouts. He's shown a solid chin, and he's never really taken huge shots. He's good defensively. But Baeza, he's a solid grappler, good jiu-jitsu black belt, but there isn't a ton of footage of him on tape grappling in MMA, really. I've seen him hit some nice double legs, nice ground and pound. He was throwing some elbows, shots over the top, along with some tricky uppercuts from inside of his opponent's guard. He'll also, you know, take the back. He's a quick back taker. He'll trap the wrist when he's on top, land some ground and pound, soften his opponent up, and eventually, you know, lock in that rear naked choke. He was also able to drop Victor Reyna, locked in a deep rear naked choke. Reyna was able to survive, though. And Reyna did take down Baeza with a body lock against the cage. Baeza was able to attack with the anaconda, but, you know, Baeza doesn't have any submissions yet in his career. He is a fast twitch guy. I imagine he's hard to take down, but, you know, we did see him get taken down by Reyna. And if Matt Brown gets on top, it could be an issue. You know, I think Baeza does have the jiu-jitsu advantage. Baeza does get tired in round 3. Could maybe see Brown getting a takedown in round 3 if he slows down. But Matt Brown, man, he's still doing the damn thing at 39 years of age. He's still, you know, one of the best action fighters in UFC history. And, man, he's produced some of the best wars. He returned from a long layoff in December of last year. Got a nasty knockout over Ben Saunders. He has won 2 fights in a row, but he's old, man. He's taking a lot of damage. At 39 years of age, it makes sense that he's a big underdog here. But he's still that rabid dog, man. You can never count him out. And he'll throw a jab, some low kicks. But, man, he really wants to, you know, get inside, back you to the fence, put damage on you. Brown handpipes. He parries very well. He throws nice combinations. He'll attack the body. Nice left hook, straight right. He'll, you know, mix the strikes up body head. The left hook is a strike he uses a lot as a lead. He'll leap into it. He'll go body head with it. He'll mix in tight hooks, uppercuts, and combinations. Nice elbows. Good head kicks. But defensively, man, he moves his head fairly well, but he likes to trade. He takes damage. He has lost a step. He isn't as fast with his attacks or closing the distance. And he struggles with kickers, weak to the body, you know. And he's still a fairly durable guy. And he has 15 knockouts, so he's someone that could put you out. But he's been TKO'd twice. He's an underrated grappler, in my opinion. Strong clinch attack, dirty boxing, elbows, knees. His wrestling is much better than people give him credit for as well. Good cage grinding ability. And he has the capabilities of slowing fights down, being more methodical, which he likes to do now. He'll close the distance in the clinch, use those knees, those elbows, get a trip, get a body lock. And in his last match, I mean, he was able to land those heavy elbows that put Ben Saunders out cold. I don't think he's going to have to worry about takedowns here, but he has struggled with double legs in the past. And he struggled with submission defense over his career. He has 6 submissions, but he's been submitted 11 times. Recently, he's been much harder to submit. The only person that's really submitted him in recent memory is Damian Maya. His cardio, his grit can never be questioned, and he's going to come in here ready to die. But Matt Brown, he's obviously a live dog. He's a lot more experienced. He's better on the inside. And if he forces Miguel into a brawl or if he can get on top of him, that may be trouble for Caramel Thunder. But the thing to me is, I just think Baez is too fast. His kicks are going to be a big factor. I think Brown's going to get hit to the body. And I think he's going to get finished. I think that he's going to get hurt to the body and taken out by Baez. So I'm going with Miguel Baez to get a big-time win and run his winning streak to 9. Man, here we go. This fight is badass. Yadong Song taking on Marlon Vera. And the Chinese sensation Song Yadong, you know, he's set to return here. Yet another high-profile matchup. This time, you know, the 22-year-old is going to be locking horns with the surging Marlon Chito Vera. Song, he's undefeated in the UFC in 5 fights, but needs to regain some momentum after he had that draw in his last fight. He fought a very tough guy in Cody Stamann, and he actually won the fight on the judges' scorecards, but a point deduction cost him the win. And, man, I mean, if you guys have been watching my channel, you guys know I'm a huge fan of this guy, Song Yadong. I think he's a big-time prospect. I think he could potentially be a future UFC champion. And he's super athletic, dangerous, man, especially in the first round. 4 of his 6 KOs have been in round 1. And he likes to pressure forward, cut off the cage, but he's very light on his feet. Long karate stance, very fast in and out. His distance control is incredible. He could slide in and out of range very well. Cuts off the cage, and really, his presence in there is something else. He makes fighters skirt the cage. Guys really respect him a lot. Great jab. He'll double jab his way into range. Heavy low kicks. He'll throw tight 1-2s. Really nasty straight and right hook. Good left hook, right straight combination. His left hook lead is very nice. Left hook counter. He'll throw nice uppercut left hooks. His overhand right is nasty. He's knocked multiple opponents out with that overhand right. He will work the body with punches. He, you know, mixes it up very well. Slips and rips. Great balance on the feet. He's smooth, very fluid, very little wasted movement. He'll throw spinning back kicks to the body, to the head. Good round kicks. You know, I think the in and out movement of Song is going to cause Vera a lot of issues. And I expect Song to be the one controlling the center. If he can back Vera up, land an exit, he might knock him out, man. And Song is a warrior. When he gets hit, he wants to get it right back, which could be an issue in some fights because, you know, you don't want to get emotional in there, but he has good defense. And when he gets hit, he returns immediately with combinations. The thing is, Song can get a little bit tired in that third round. And when he becomes a little bit more flat-footed, a little bit more stationary, guys can start landing some shots on him. We saw that against Vince Morales. But as he gets older, as he starts to get better at, you know, pacing himself, as he starts to get better, you know, just with the more experience, the more cage time, that's going to go away, and he's going to become a freak, man. But, man, I mean, his power is very evident. He has 5 knockouts in his career, but he started fighting very young. I mean, his power is very prevalent now, and he's a very good grappler. I mean, he showed strong offensive and defensive wrestling skills in his fights. In his fight with Vince Morales, man, he showed very good strength and physicality for the division. He was able to dominate him against the cage in a clinch. He landed a couple well-timed double legs. And when he fought Felipe Aranches, who's a dangerous guard player, Song was able to play in his guard and finish him with brutal elbows in top position. If Song into a good position, posture, and land shots, he can turn your lights out. And he isn't a submission artist. He doesn't have a ton of finishes on the ground. But his defensive wrestling skills are also very solid. He's a good sprawl, good movement. He's hard to shoot in on. Very nice front choke. Hard to hold down. Great scrambling ability. Great sweeping ability. He was able to sweep and compete with Cody Stamann on the mat for the first 2 rounds. And Stamann is a very high-level college wrestler. Stamann was able to take Yadong down 5 times, but Yudong was able to sweep Stamen. Yudong was able to stand up very quickly when Stamen took him down, and Yudong was able to stop a lot of takedowns. And Chito Vera doesn't have that college wrestling capability. Yudong Song does get tired in the third round, like I said. When he fought Vince Morales, he got teed off on. When he fought Stamen in round three, he was dominated on the mat in the third. He didn't take much damage on bottom, but couldn't work his way back to his feet or sweep how he did in the first two rounds. But he's still yet to be submitted in his career, and he's a beast, man. But he's going to be taking on, you know, one of the best action fighters in the UFC today, Marlon Chito Vera. I would say he's one of the, you know, most fun fighters of all time in the UFC's bantamweight division. He's never in a boring fight, kill or be killed, five consecutive wins, all by finish. He has been fighting lower-level competition, and this is the first step up in terms of fighting a ranked opponent for Vera in over 3 years. Vera was linked to several fights in 2020 that were postponed for one reason or another. You know, he was scheduled to face Jimmy Rivera at UFC 247, but Rivera suffered an injury. He was then linked to two fights, one with Eddie Wineland, another one with Ray Borg, that were canceled due to COVID-19. I'm sure Rivera is chomping at the bit to get in there. He's a savage, man, on the feet. He's constantly going forward, walks his opponents down. Incredible cardio, a hell of a chin. Never been finished, and he's also finished 14 of his 16 wins. He's a stance switcher. He could kick effectively from both stances. Nasty rear leg kicks. He'll throw nice inside-outside low kicks, front round kicks to the body, brutal head kick. Really nice knees up the middle that are very dangerous. In close range, he could slip and rip. Good knees, good elbows. And if he can get you against the cage, he'll explode in with multiple punch combinations, go for the kill. His boxing has improved as well since he's been working with Jason Perillo. You know, he's improved his jab. He'll throw more shots to the body. His straight left hand's also getting a lot more straight, a lot more accurate. He also has a nice left hook. He'll throw a jab left hook from orthodox. He'll throw a lot of lead left hooks and uppercuts. And he does stand tall, and he could be susceptible to low kicks, to body shots, to straight punches. And he could be hittable at times. He can be pot-shotted as well. And he starts slow in a lot of fights. He needs kind of time to break his opponents down, time to wear him out. He isn't much of a round winner, but he's just a guy that's always looking for the finish and usually gets it in most of his fights. He has 6 knockouts, and he's a super dangerous, opportunistic black belt. When he gets his opponents near the fence, he'll explode in, unload with a barrage of shots, and he's excellent at mixing in the Thai plum, you know, landing ruthless knees to the body, to the head. He'll also look to snatch up a neck from standing position when he has you overwhelmed like that. In his last match with Andre Yule, he tried several standing arm triangles. He was able to snap down Yule with a front headlock in the third round, then finish the fight with some brutal ground and pound. And Vera isn't the fighter to use a wrestling-heavy game plan. He likes to pressure guys and then force them to shoot in on him or catch a submission from standing, snap you down with a front choke. But Vera can't pull guard. He will, you know, go for the submission and lose rounds at times. We saw that against Nohalin Hernandez. Vera also doesn't have great takedown defense, but tricky off his back with arm bars, triangles. Most of Vera's victories are via triangle. I don't think his guard is extremely high level, though. I wouldn't be surprised if Song was able to control and hurt Vera from inside of his guard. Vera does have 7 submissions, so you always have to be careful. And Marlon's going to have a big experience edge here. He's riding a wave of momentum. His cardio is top-notch, and that's going to be a big thing if he can weather the storm. And he has the will and heart. Now he just has to, you know, show that he has the heart and the skills to pay the bills here. But in this matchup, man, I'm a huge fan of Chito Vera, but I just think he's up against it here. Song's going to be much faster. I feel cleaner with the striking. I see him being able to land some big shots on Marlon. I also think Song's going to use low kicks in this fight. I don't see Marlon being able to take him down. I don't see Song slowing down because I don't think Marlon's going to be able to pressure due to the pot shotting and just the speed difference and power difference here. I see it staying on the feet. I don't see Marlon being able to use his patented, you know, blitzes because I don't think he's going to back him up near the fence. And Song to me is too fast, too explosive. I just have to take him here. And I think he's going to win by either TKO or decision. Very hard to finish Marlon, so I'd probably say via decision. Up next, we have another fun fight. Eric Anders taking on Christoph Jotko. And Christoph Jocko, he steadied himself. He had three consecutive losses, but he's bounced back now with two consecutive victories. The talent level has been low. He's definitely getting a tough test here and a step up in Eric Anders. And Jocko, he's a point fighter. He's a risk-adverse fighter. On the feet, he likes to play an outside game. He's primarily a southpaw, but he switches stances, uses a lot of movement, fakes, feints, false starts. Doesn't like to get in exchanges, and therefore uses a lot of kicks, straights, faint level changes, come up into straight left hands, uppercuts, kind of drive-by type attacks. He'll try to pull counter with straights, with uppercuts. His hands are solid, but he could sometimes throw lazy shots, get countered over the top. He leans back as well, leaves his chin exposed. He also has some excellent kicks, front and round kicks to the body, to the head. He'll look for some spinning kicks, knees up the middle. He'll throw some solid elbows. In his last match, we saw, man, he did not like getting pressured. He's heavy on his lead leg. He doesn't check low kicks. He can be hit with hard body kicks, and he's uncomfortable in the pocket, vulnerable to getting knocked out there. Has to stay sharp for 15 minutes here against an athletic hitter like Anders. Jocko, he has been finished twice by strikes, has 6 knockouts, but in 11 UFC fights, he has just 1 finish. Jocko, he's become very dependent on grappling in recent fights. Instead of trading in the pocket, Jocko prefers to grab, clinch up. He also has great timing on a single, his double legs. Good job of using the shot to come up into the clinch, push fighters to the cage. When he gets takedowns, he's a control guy. He has a brown belt, but really doesn't go for submissions. He's an aggressive passer, likes to get to side control, crucifix, good mount. He can't be taken down, but very good scrambling ability and get-ups. In his last match, Jocko was able to counter the slams of his opponent, Marc-Andre Barriot, land on top. When he got taken down by Dave Branch, he stood up very quickly. But getting taken down and controlled against the fence first, Branch did cost him that fight, most likely. Jocko probably won't have to worry about Anders being offensive with wrestling here, though. I do believe Jocko should and will look to mix it up. Jocko, he has just 1 submission, has been submitted 1 time, but he uses a lot of movement. His style expends a lot of energy, and he was tired in round 3 of his last fight. I do think Jocko is talented, and the more he wins, the more confidence he's going to get, the better he's probably going to look. But taking on Eric Anders, who's going to be looking to earn his first 3-fight UFC winning streak, Anders has won back-to-back fights and arguably has earned the biggest win of his career against Gerald Meerschaerter's last time out. Anders, he's always going to be known for his time with Alabama, but he's a UFC veteran by now. This is his 10th UFC fight coming up. Anders, he's a pressure fighter. Good job of edging his way inside, pushing opponents towards the cage, cutting fighters off. He's a southpaw, and he's always looking to land that straight left hand. He'll throw a 1-2 lead uppercut left hook. He'll throw a left hook straight right. When he's walking his opponents down, he lets his hands go with his check hook with the straight left hand. He's pretty good. He hits hard. He wears on opponents with the pace. He makes them go backwards. Good head kick. He can be very low volume, though, and just follow opponents, doesn't cut them off, and just loses decisions by just walking guys down, getting out-volumed, and not cutting the cage off. We saw that against Elias, against Lyoto Machida. Anders does have power, man. He's vicious. 8 knockouts. He's only been knocked out 1 time in his career, and that was actually because he could not answer the bell. He's taking some crazy beatings, man. Watch this fight with Thiago Santos, with Khalil Roundtree. He definitely has super heart, super durability, and he's a pretty decent grappler. Good job of stalking opponents to the cage, closing distance for the single collar, double underhook. He's a strong guy. He'll control against the cage, land knees, look for singles, look for body locks. Decent single leg in space as well. Very physically strong, hard to hold down. Usually he's going to be the stronger fighter in the clinch in most fights. And doesn't shoot takedowns really, but he has been able to defend 76% of the takedowns attempted on him in the UFC. And he's never really been stuck under opponent in the UFC very long. And when he's taken down, he gets right back up. Anders comes in good shape usually. I don't think he's going to gas out. When I was breaking down this fight, the one thing I believed right away is Jocko's going to have the advantage if it hits the scorecards. Anders, he has a tendency to make fights close. I guess both guys do to an extent, but when you look at it, Jocko's 14-1 in decisions. Even in the UFC, Jocko has a 7-1 record in decisions. Eric Anders, he's just 4-3 when fights go to decision in the UFC. He's 2-3. So he's not very good. Even in his last fight with Jared Meerschaert, that decision was razor close. But after watching tape, man, I think Anders actually could win a decision or get a knockout. In the grappling exchanges, I think Anders' physicality is going to shut down Jocko's grappling game. You know, I don't think Anders is going to look to get takedowns, but I doubt Jocko could hold him down. Anders needs to pressure here. He has to try to throw more volume, walk down Jocko, make him go backwards, make him tired. If he lands clean with that power, I'm not sure Jocko's going to be able to take it. Jocko isn't as tough mentally as fighters like Elias or Meerschaert, who both survived after being dropped. Jocko also gets a bit tired in round three, and I just feel that at some point Anders is going to close the show and knock him out here. So I'm going with Eric Anders to get the victory. Up next, you have a really interesting fight. Edson Jr. Barbosa taking on Dan Ige. And Edson, you know, he's a slight favorite. He's making his featherweight debut, which is what makes this fight close, in my opinion. Because, man, I mean, this was at 155 pounds. Ige would be going to sleep, man. He'd be getting taken out on a stretcher, I think. But at 145, it at least makes it more interesting. But I've seen pictures of Edson, man. He looks pretty good. I mean, he looks ripped. He looks in good shape. But Dan Ige is on a surge. If he can get a victory over a fighter like Edson, he's going to solidify himself as a contender. I mean, Ige did get the biggest win of his career over Mirsad Bektik in his last fight. He has won 5 consecutive UFC fights, so he's on a run here. But, man, I mean, he's going to be taking on one of the best strikers in UFC history. On the feet, this is a mismatch, man. I mean, Edson's going to be way bigger. He's going to have a big reach advantage. You know, he's a lot taller, 4 inches taller, 4-inch reach advantage with the kicks, that's even longer. So I think the switch kicks to the body, where I think Ige's a little weak to the body, the leg kicks, head kicks, spinning kicks. I mean, I think it's going to be a kicking display here for Edson Barbosa. I think he even has the better hands and has better footwork. I mean, Ige is a little bit slow, man, even at 45. Edson is going to tear him up on the feet, man. I think if this stays standing, I mean, unless Ige can just close that distance and land a bomb, or Edson's chin is just completely gone from the weight cut. Edson has a strong chin, man. He's hard to knock out. He's hard to hurt in a lot of fights. And, man, I mean, Dan Ige has to work to get this fight to the ground. If he can get it to the ground, this fight is over, man. And Edson, he's a strong grappler. He's an underrated grappler, man. If he can make it to 145 safely, he's going to be massive for that division. I think he's going to be a load to take down. I mean, in recent years, Barbosa, he's faced some of the best grapplers at 155, and it skewed some people's perception, because if you look at Edson's UFC career, even including the Khabib and the Kevin Lee fights where he got taken down a few times each, he still has 80% takedown defense. And in the fight with Khabib and Kevin Lee, he was taken down 4 times, both in those fights each. In the 20 other fights he's had in the UFC, he's been taken down just 7 times total. So, I mean, he's been taken down more times in those two fights than he's been taken down in all his other UFC fights combined. And Edson, besides Lee or Khabib, has only been taken down once in a fight, more than once in a fight, only 1 time since 2012. So when fighters shoot in on Barbosa, man, I mean, they're usually not going to get the takedowns, and Barbosa's always dangerous, because if you use the same entry on Barbosa more than a couple times, he's going to counter you with a flying knee with a kick, and he's going to knock you out, man. I mean, just ask Beneil Dariush. And this fight, I mean, man, I actually got a lot of confidence in Barbosa. If he looks good on the scale, I'm gonna bet on Barbosa, and I think he should dominate here. I think he's just levels above Ige, man. He's levels above, but that weight cut puts a wrench into it. But, man, I got to go with Edson Barbosa via knockout. Up next here, we got the co-main event. Man, this fight, I wish I wasn't going down. I'm a fan of both these girls, but Claudia Gadelha, Anja Hill, they're both set to collide here, co-main event. So that's, you know, a big thing there. They're in the co-main event. And this is an interesting matchup for multiple reasons. You know, Claudia Gadelha, without a doubt, she's one of the best female fighters we've ever seen in the UFC. She's been in the top 5 of the strawweight division since they brought it in. And nowadays, she's looking a bit weathered, though. She's been jumping from camp to camp, getting tired in fights. She hasn't won 2 fights in a row since 2017. And she's coming off a decision victory over Randa Markos. Her opponent, Anja Hill, although she's 3 years older, she's been peaking lately. She's won 3 consecutive fights. This is already going to be the 3rd fight of 2020 for Hill, the 7th fight in 15 months. She's been the queen of short-notice fights lately, and man, I mean, this is another short notice fight for her, so I'm sure she's all the pressure's off. I mean, she's the underdog in this fight. Not a lot of people are giving her a chance to win. Her opponent, Claudia Gadelha, on the other side of the spectrum, she's dealt with some injuries, a lot of things out of her control that cost her fights. And this is the fourth scheduled fight for Gadelha in 5 months. And hopefully the first time she steps in the octagon. But the issue with that is Claudia has been deep into multiple training camps for a fight with Alexa Grasso. She even cut weight and weighed in. So you have to wonder if the constant training, the mental stress of getting fights pulled has worn her down. And Gadelha is an extremely dedicated girl. She will do the work, but maybe she's going to be overtrained. Maybe she's going to gas out if it gets to the later rounds. But in this fight, Gadelha is a pretty massive clear path to victory, though. She's one of the most physically strong fighters in the division's history. She's an elite jiu-jitsu black belt. And she's been submitted 3 times, Angela Hill. And Angela has also been out-wrestled 2 decisions. So Gadelha has to see that. I mean, she has to know she has a massive advantage on the ground. She can get it there. Gadelha, she hasn't earned a submission in around 3 years, but this is a big opportunity to do so. Angela Hill, she is getting better at grappling. She's shown that in recent performances. She's improved her clinch control, good head positioning, dangerous elbows, decent trips as well. And when she gets on top, she's very good with ground and pound. We saw that with Hannah Cyphers. Hill also gained some confidence off of her back. It's obvious. She'll attack with triangles, arm bars. She'll throw elbows from inside of her guard. She has been taken down by strikers like Loma Lukbume, Yan Xiaonan, though. And I just don't see her threatening or submitting Gadelha if she gets taken down. Gadelha has great passing ability, great top pressure. If she gets on top early, I really would not be surprised if CG submitted her quickly. I do think she at least will be able to control on top if she gets takedowns. And Hill really needs to show better takedown defense here. The kicks for Hill will likely be holstered due to the takedowns that Claudia has. And Hill, she does her best when she could pressure forward. But in this one, I just don't believe she's going to be able to go forward unless she wears Gadelha down. Because Gadelha, she's too strong. She's too compact. She has the grappling edge. She hits hard. Hill, she needs to use, you know, her jab, her left hook, her drive-by straights. Just try to pot shot, touch, not be touched, defend the takedowns, attack the body, wear on Claudia, try to throw elbows, cut her open, maybe stop the fight via doctor stoppage. But Hill isn't a cardio machine herself, and she tends to tire in fights. The output edge is definitely in favor of Hill. I do see Claudia having success on the feet. Hill struggles with forward pressure. I think Gadelha has better inside boxing, and Gadelha is fast with their hands, good entries into her punching combinations, throws very nice straight right hand, good left hook, left uppercut. She has nice elbows. She'll sit in the pocket and throw down against you. Decent boxing. She's good at exiting and entering with elbows and punches. She's comfortable in exchanges, hard hooks, good overhand rights. She'll throw a wide left hook, counter, decent body kicks, head kicks. She's super tough. She's a great chin. She's never been finished. I just think she's going to be too much. I think she's a bad matchup for Angie. I got to go with Claudia, and I'm actually going to go with Claudia via either rear naked choke in round one or decision. Up next here, we have an interesting fight, really interesting fight. Walt Harris, he's making his return after nearly a year away from the octagon. He had that extremely horrific tragedy happen to his daughter, and this is going to be the first fight following her passing. So, you know, it's the main event. It's a massive fight for him. I'm sure he's extremely pumped up. He's ready to go. And Walt Harris is super dangerous. He's finished his last 2 fights in 1 minute, 2 seconds combined. He has 2 second-round finishes, but when he fights, go out of the first round, he really has a salty record. I mean, he really is a guy that goes in there extremely dangerous in the first round and tries to put you out. When fights go out of round one, he has a record of 2-4-1. Harris has just won 1 decision in his career. And it was a contested split decision victory against Andrei Arlovski that later was turned into a no contest due to a drug failure. So on his record, he has 0 decision victories. And this is a big step for him, taking a 5-round fight against an experienced guy like Overeem. I like Harris. I mean, he's dangerous. He has a really nice head kick, really good straight punches. He'll switch stances. He likes to throw some front kicks. He's a pretty elite athlete for heavyweight, but he could sometimes not bring his hands back up after he throws punches. He can get hit with clean counters. And when he lands, he's a finisher. He'll finish the show. I mean, all 13 of his victories are via knockout. But, I mean, he has been finished twice by strikes himself. And I usually don't do this, but I'm going to show you guys here just how low volume of a striker Walt Harris is. I mean, it just makes it extremely hard to trust him, because if he doesn't get this finish in the first round over a smart, experienced guy like Overeem, who has to know this as well, and I mean, how can you trust this guy to win the fight? Looking at it here, I mean, if you just look at it, I mean, look at these strikes by Walt. 18, 1, 22, 31, 33, 32, 21, 0, 21, 29, 24, 17, 4. I mean, some of these, he's getting some quick knockouts. But man, I mean, when you're going to a three-round decision right here with Shamil and you're only landing 33 strikes, when you're going to a three-round decision with Andre Arlovski, you're landing 24 significant strikes. That's not good, man. That's no volume there. He's not throwing anything. He's not throwing enough. So, man, on the contrary here, when you're looking at Reem's decisions here, I mean, here's a decision with Mir. He lands 62 strikes. Decision with Roy Nelson, 62 strikes. Let's see, another. That one with Verdum, he only landed 21. I remember that was a terrible fight right there. But then even in his last fight here, 74 strikes landed. So, I mean, he's going to be the guy throwing way, way more volume here. 100%. I mean, he's the better striker as well. He has more diversity in his strikes. You know, he has better defense. Obviously, on the ground, he's going to have a huge advantage here as well. I think if he could take Walt down, he's going to be able to control him, potentially finish him. I mean, we've seen, you know, Walt on the ground when he fought Verdum. I mean, Verdum took his back, armbarred him very quickly. You know, he's struggled a bit on the mat. Soa Pallaly finished him on the ground very easily. And if Overeem can get on top, Overeem definitely have a potential chance to finish as well. And man, it's just like, it's hard to keep picking fucking Overeem, man. It pisses me off almost. It's like, the guy on tape is just better than these guys. He's better than Walt Harris. He should beat Walt Harris. If Walt Harris can't knock out Arlovski, if he can't take out guys like Mark Godbeer in the first round, I'm gonna go with Alistair Overeem via finish, maybe third round, fourth round, or decision. Decision would be kind of crazy. I think Overeem would probably get the finish. I'm going with Overeem. Maybe it'll look like a terrible pick again, man. I don't know. Last time I picked Overeem, I was 1 second away from getting that one right. I did pick Overeem correctly in his two fights with his two-fight win streak. So, I mean, Overeem, you know, he has won two out of three fights. I'm going to roll with him here and say he gets the victory. But, man, I mean, to me, I don't have a lot of confidence in either guy getting the win. And the only reason why I'm picking Overeem is I just think he's better everywhere. Walt throws very low volume, and you're just counting on a first-round knockout for Walt or bust, and I just can't do that. So I'm going to go with Overeem to get the victory, but, man, one of my least confident picks. And so that's the breakdown for this week for this card for Overeem versus Harris. Not this week. I guess this is the second breakdown of the week. But for my most confident pick on this card, I'm going to be going with Mike Davis. I just think that he's the much better fighter, much more well-rounded. For my parlay of the week, it is going to include Mike Davis and Claudia Gadelha. I think you could also do Mike Davis, Yadong Song. But I just feel like, you know, Marlon Chito Vera, maybe he'll turn up in that third round and get the finish. So I'm going to go with Gadelha. I think she's a little bit safer. For the underdog play of the week, I'm actually very confident on Rodrigo Nascimento to get the win. I don't understand why he's the underdog. I think it should be like a 2-1 favorite. So Nascimento, underdog. Underdog of the week, but I picked quite a few underdogs. You know, I believe Eric Anders is an underdog, Barella is an underdog, Darren Elkins is an underdog, Overeem is an underdog. So, you know, there's quite a few underdogs to play there that I believe are live. I'm not sure if Hernandez is an underdog or it's a pick'em, but that's another very close fight. But yeah, there you go, guys. Thanks for watching. Make sure to comment, like, subscribe. Put down in the comments who you guys like, who you guys are going for, and I'll make sure to respond. And thanks for watching. Let's have fun watching these fights tonight and on Saturday.